Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he answers difficult questions about Hinduism which are commonly posed by people living in the scientific age. This series clears many doubts which the younger generation has about the validity of Hinduism and provides rational answers to these logical questions.
Amyopasanayarthayantyanudinam kinchit phalam sve sitam. Svargamathapavargamapare Yoga Diyagyadibhi Asma Yadunandanangri Yugaladhyanavadhanarthinam Kim Lokena Damena Kim Nripatina Svarga Pavargaishcha Kim Nama Kamalna Kamal Malini Namah Kamal Pa Namaste Kamale Chana Yo Brahmanam Vidadhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedanshcha Prahinoti Tasmai Tagvangha devamatma buddhi prakasham mumukchurvai sharanamaham prapadye.
The divine souls, we'll have a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan and after that we'll continue with this series on Hinduism.
Jai Radhe Radhe Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Thank you. jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri 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 radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri radhe jay radhe jay radhe radhe jay radhe jay shri 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 radhe jay radhe radhe radhe
Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe, Radhe, Jai Radhe, Jai Shri Radhe. ਬੋਲੀ ਅਲਬੇਲੀ ਸਰਕਾਰ ਕੀ। Yesterday I was explaining to you in general about the difference between Hinduism and the other religions of the world, and I explained giving an example of the description of God, that although all religions worship the same God, the description of God in each religion differs in the depth and detail to which it goes. So it means that there's not a Hindu God that we worship, and then there's another God, a separate God that the Christians worship, and another separate God that the Muslims worship. And if there are people living on some other earth planet somewhere else in the universe, they have some other God that they worship. No, there's one God for all the people of this earth planet, and in fact all the people of the entire universe, wherever there may be souls living. They're all worshiping one single God. There's one God for the whole entire universe. So it's only the description of God that differs. Yesterday I gave you the example that the description of God in other religions, in some religions it's not there at all. In some religions it's in a very general way, just like saying God is supreme, God is divine. But exactly what is He? What are His powers? What are His detailed characteristics? What does He look like? What would it be like if you meet Him? There's only one place where that's described, and that's in the Sanskrit scriptures of Sanatan Dharma. So it's not that when you see, oh, there's a description of Krishna, Krishna is God, that it means the Christians aren't worshipping Krishna when they worship God. They are. They just don't know it. To put it bluntly, they just don't know it. They're worshipping God, but what is their God? They don't know. It's just a God. It means some supreme divine power. They don't know that that God is actually Krishna. And Krishna can have other forms like Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, Ram. He can also be formless. So they just don't know that part. But if they're actually worshipping God, they are worshipping Krishna, because there's only one God. That's why Krishna said, Ye yatha mam prapadyante tas tathaiva bhajamyaham. Whoever is worshipping God anywhere in this world, he says in the Gita, they're all worshipping me. So it's just that the full description is in Hinduism. So we have the actual details of what God looks like, what His various forms are, what His abodes are. So it's so detailed. It's the total package. Whereas other religions are worshipping the same God, but with just a very brief and very vague description of God. That's the only difference. We can take a couple of other topics quickly and see how Hinduism goes into so much more detail. Take a common question which so many people who grow up in America have. Why do bad things happen to good people? And why do good things happen to bad people? So if you ask the average American who has not been exposed to Hindu philosophy, but they're religious, they maybe had a conventional religious upbringing here in America, the common answer is, well, it's a mystery, or it's God's plan. So that means God is so unjust that he makes one person suffer and he makes another person enjoy, and even if that person is a good person, he still makes them suffer, and he makes one person die young, and one mother loses her child and the child was just 5 years old, and another person is not even good but they have four children and they all live longer than their parents. How is that fair? Oh, it's God's plan. This is the standard answer that you would get from Western philosophy, Western religions. In other words, we don't have an answer, we don't know, so we're just saying something. It's a mystery, it's God's plan, just have faith that God knows what he's doing. Okay, that's a nice thing to say, but really, intellectually, we need a little more satisfaction than that. And I had these same questions as well. And this was one of the main reasons that I adopted Hinduism, is because I found the answers, I found satisfactory answers. Not just satisfactory is a too soft of a word, I found, you know, exact answers for all of these questions that I had. So, of course, the answer is in the law of karma. That everything carries over from life to life. Hinduism teaches that we are the soul, and our soul is eternal. So each one of us is an individual soul, and we're inhabiting a physical body right now, but the body is temporary, and the soul is our eternal self. So we, meaning the soul, we have existed forever. So we have had uncountable births. It never began, imagine. There never was a first birth. We have existed forever. So whenever the universe is manifested, I already talked about how God manifests the universe, then dissolves it, then manifests it, then dissolves it. So this cycle of creation and dissolution of the universe is also eternal. So the universe never began. That's an eternal cycle. So God has been here forever. The universe has been here forever, or the cycle of creation and dissolution of the universe has gone on forever. And we, the souls, have been born uncountable times from eternity until now. So all of that is counted. All of what? Well, all of everything we did in all of our past lifetimes. Whenever we were born as a human, what karma did we do? What actions did we perform? That's all compiled. You can say stockpiled. None of it just disappears like that. Whatever you think, whatever you say, whatever you do, God keeps track of all of that. It counts as karma, and it's added to your sanchit karma. Out of that sanchit karma, you're given a little bit of that to undergo the consequence of in this life. That is called your prarabdha karma. That's your destiny. So Ramayana says, Hani labh jivan marana yash apayash vidhihath. Certain things are controlled by your destiny, like the situation you're born into. Who is your mother and father? What house are you born into? What species are you born into? What country are you born in? Are you born rich or poor? How much money will you be able to accumulate during your life? How much name and fame or infamy will you get during your life? These things are already determined by your destiny. Where did that destiny come from? Is it just a random decision that God makes? No. Purva janma kritam karma tadbhagyamiti kathyate. or Taddaiva miti kathyate. This shloka comes in both ways. Daiva and Bhagya means the same thing. Your destiny. Where does it come from? Purva janma kritam karma. The actions, the karma you performed in your past lifetimes fructifies as your destiny in this life. So there's nothing random about it. Exactly what you did, you get. As they say in the West, as you sow, so you shall reap. But you don't reap it in the same life. That's the thing. You reap it in a future life. Because this life is already determined according to your past life. So that can be adjusted by what you're doing in this life. That is all going to be kept track of, and you'll get that in your next life. So this is just a brief overview of the philosophy of karma as explained in Hinduism. Avashyameva bhoktavyam kritam karma shubha shubham Mahabharata. Everyone must undergo the consequences of their past good and bad actions. So it means it doesn't matter how good you are in this life, if you did something bad in a past life, you have to undergo the consequence of that. And conversely, no matter how bad you are in this life, if you did something good in a last life, you'll get the consequence of that too. So that is why bad people who are bad in this life sometimes have good things happen to them, and good people who are good in this life sometimes have bad things happen to them. There's no mystery to it at all. It's not just some obscure plan by God. It's just that God is giving us the exact consequences for the actions we performed in our last life. If you plant a cactus seed in your backyard and water it, and then a thorny cactus grows, then start blaming God. God, why did you give me a cactus growing in my backyard? I wanted a nice, sweet-smelling, flowering bush. So God will say, then why didn't you plant the seed of a flowering bush? Why did you plant the seed of a cactus? So it's the same thing with our actions. If we're planting cactus seeds, it means we're doing bad actions in our past lifetime. So that's what we're going to get. We're going to get suffering in this life. Not more or less. Exactly what we earned. And the same thing with our prosperity, exactly what we earned. How much charity you gave, how many good actions you did in your previous lifetimes, that much prosperity and happiness you will have in this life. So there is no mystery when it comes to these things if you go to the correct place to get the answer. Hinduism explains all of this. Why do good things happen to bad people? Why do bad things happen to good people? Why is a person born in such a good situation and another person is born into such a bad situation? It's all according to the past karma of these people. Why does one person die young? Again, it's the destiny. The moment of death is already determined at the time a person is born. So there's no such thing as dying before your time. Premature death. Tragic death. No matter how a person dies, how tragic it appears to us, it's not tragic. That person's death was predestined at the moment they were born. So how was that determined? Well, God gave you this body, and He already determined you will get it for this many years, months, days, hours, minutes, seconds, and at this exact moment, you will leave this body because you're only going to receive the consequences of this many past karma in this particular life. After that, you're going to go, and according to what actions you performed during this life, you'll be reborn again. And if you died before you were old enough to even perform any karma, then it's still based on your previous lifetime's actions. You still have all that sanchit karma from which to draw on. So does that mean everything is destined? Another big question in Westerners' minds. If there's destiny, then what about our free will? And if we have free will, then what about destiny? Well, actually, you have both, because there's three kinds of karma. There's your sanchit karma, that huge stock of past actions. There is your prarabdha karma, your destiny you have to undergo in this life. And then you have kriyaman karma, which means that you're presently performing new karma. So the prarabdha is just the things that happen to you, what you would call good luck, bad luck. That's happening to you, that's your prarabdha. But your destiny does not control what you think, what you say, what you do. You control that. No matter all the other things that are destined, you still control your thoughts, words, and actions. So that's your kriyaman karma. With that, with those free will actions, you're determining what your next life is going to be like. Or you could even become God-realized. Hinduism also says, Ihache dashakat bodhum prak sharirasya visrasaha tatah sargeshu lokeshu shariratvaya kalpate kathopanishad. Only as a human being can you perform karma, what we call purushartha. You can do good, you can do bad, you can even attain God, you can attain mukti. Other living beings cannot perform kriyaman karma. They have their sanchit karma, they have their prarabdha, even animals and plants, but they're not performing new actions. Those are souls who have been born as humans many times before, and based on those actions they performed when they were humans, they're undergoing the consequences in some other species. But those are called bhogyoni, because they are not able to perform new karma. Whereas this human life form is called karmayoni, because we can perform purushartha, we can perform kriyaman karma, free will actions. So all of this is clarified in Hinduism. There's nothing left unanswered. So with these answers, we can understand why things are the way they are, why they happen the way they do, and we don't have to question God, that why is God making this thing happen, or why is God making that thing happen. We can understand the reasons for everything. So we see that such a complete and detailed knowledge is not available elsewhere. Bits and pieces of this may find their ways into other philosophies and other religions, but the complete description is only found in our scriptures of Sanatan Dharma. So a question comes, if we're all worshipping the same God, everybody on earth, we all are bound by the same laws of karma. Even if whether someone believes in karma or not, they're still bound by the same laws that we are. They still, even if someone doesn't believe in past lives or doesn't believe they'll be reborn, they still will be. When they die, they'll still be reborn, and they'll get the consequences of their actions from this life. So we're all bound by the same rules, no matter what religion we're in. So this philosophy of Sanatan Dharma is universal. It applies to all the souls, everyone in existence. Then why have other philosophies and other religions? Well, sometimes, for some reason, at a particular place, at a particular time, a divine personality may descend and just introduce a part of the philosophy in a certain way, just to accomplish a certain thing that was required at that time. In this way, a different dharma may be established, like Bodh dharma, Jain dharma, Sikh dharma. These are actual dharmas which were established by real divine personalities. These were not just material beings who decided to create some new religion. These were actual divine personalities who established these dharma. So it was for a particular purpose at a particular time, and those dharmas began at a certain time and eventually they will end. But Sanatan Dharma is there always. On this earth planet, on any earth planet, anywhere in the universe, the Vedas, Gita, Sanatan Dharma, Ram, Krishna, this is all eternal, it's always there. Other dharmas start and fade away. Another one comes up and fades away. So they're temporary, but Sanatan Dharma is permanent. And sometimes, for one reason or another, to accomplish one thing or another, a divine personality may come and introduce something which ends up starting another religion. Sometimes it may happen that a purely material individual starts up, or a group of people start up a philosophy out of their own material intellect, and people start following that, and it ends up becoming a religion. Some religions form in this way as well. And in this way we have different religions who may or may not understand this point, that we're all worshipping the same God, but that's a fact, we are. And they may or may not be open or ready to receive this complete knowledge which is here in Sanatan Dharma. So maybe that little part that they have in their dharma, that's enough for them right now. Maybe they can graduate sometime in the future and be ready for this knowledge of Sanatan Dharma. God is always ready to grace any soul with this knowledge and give them, make this understanding available to them. So now we have a general understanding of how Hinduism fits into the overall picture with the other religions of our earth planet. The next big question is, what is the aim of our existence? This is also something which is clarified with such precision by Hinduism, which cannot be found anywhere else. In fact, before I came to Hinduism, I honestly didn't even believe that anyone had an answer for this question. What is the meaning of life? Why are we here? In my mind, that was like a joke. Nobody could answer that question. That's just a philosophical question which people ask, but there's no answer to. No, Hinduism says there is an answer to this question. The meaning of life is the very essence of our existence. If you don't have the answer to that question, how will your living have any meaning? You have to answer that question first, then you know what direction to go in your life. Like I said, if you're just firing an arrow blindly without knowing where the target is, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to reach your target. So Hinduism clarifies what is the goal of our life. That's the first and foremost thing. And you might be surprised to know that all religions actually would agree with this fact. What is the meaning of life? What is the goal of life? To attain happiness. That's it. Very simple goal for all the souls. Why is that the goal? Again, this reason is the same for every soul, no matter what culture they're born into, no matter what religion they follow, because every soul is ansh of Bhagwan. And Bhagwan is happiness. Therefore, every soul desires happiness. I've explained this to you in several times since I've been in New York in the different series that I've been giving, but I'll briefly explain it again for those of you who might not have heard it. Why do we desire happiness? It's the nature of our soul. It can't be changed. Even if someone thinks, no, I want to have a different goal. You can all desire happiness, I'm going to desire unhappiness. Even if someone tries for a million years to stop desiring happiness and start desiring unhappiness, he'll fail. Because it's so ingrained, it's not even ingrained, it is who we are. Why? Because we are the soul, and the soul belongs to God or is part of God. There's a technical term called Ansh and Anshi. God is Anshi and the souls are Ansh. So Anshi means the one who's giving the power. And the Ansh means the one who's receiving that power. Or Anshi means the one from whom we come. And Ansh means the part, like a spark that came out of the fire. So God is like the big, huge fire, and we're like a little spark of that fire. So He's the Anshi, and we are the Ansh. He's the sun, and we're a ray of the sun. So there's an obvious relationship between a ray of the sun and the sun itself, between a spark and the fire. There's a substantial relationship. So we are really actually related to God. That's who we are. And it's also a law of nature that every Ansh desires his Anshi. Naturally loves his Anshi. A classic worldly example is water. Look at the ocean. The ocean is Anshi. And a drop of water which is up in the clouds, which rains down somewhere on land, returns to its Anshi. Why? That is Ansh, that's Anshi. There's a natural attraction. That water won't stop until it joins the ocean. Then it becomes whole and complete, satisfied. That's what happens to a soul when we find God. So desiring God is automatic and can never be changed. And the last part of the puzzle is, since God is Sat-Chit-Anand, it means He's perfect happiness, unlimited, everlasting, divine bliss. That's who God is. That substantially, if you were to analyze God chemically, like you're going to analyze a substance in the world, well, you can't do that to God. But if you did analyze Him, what analysis would come back? He is happiness. That's the analysis. And not an abstract kind of happiness like you feel in your mind. Oh, I feel happy, and then the next moment you don't. Not that kind of happiness. An actual real happiness. Substantially really existing happiness. That's why when you get that divine happiness, it's forever. It can never be. It's not just here 1 minute and gone the next. That's why God is perfectly blissful in every situation all the time. He Himself is bliss. He cannot be anything else. So the soul naturally desires that bliss. So naturally every soul desires happiness and can only be perfectly happy when we attain God. So what is the goal of life? To attain perfect, divine, everlasting, unlimited happiness. Nobody in the world would argue with that. Everybody would say yes. The goal of every soul is to find happiness. But where is that happiness? That's the question. And because of not understanding the answer to this question, we have gone uncountable lifetimes and never found perfect happiness. Imagine, the one thing we're looking for, we're not looking for anything else. We're only seeking this one thing, perfect divine happiness. And that's why we've taken birth after birth after birth. And in every birth, every breath that we've taken, every day of every life, has only been for this one thing, looking for happiness. Yet, we have never found it. Why? Because we didn't know where it was. We didn't know where the target is. See, it's like when I said, just saying God is not enough. That's too vague. Where's that target? We don't know. So just saying happiness, I want divine happiness, that's a good start, but it's not enough. We have to define the target more clearly, more precisely. So exactly where is that happiness? Hinduism tells us. Hinduism says there are two areas that you can look. Why two areas? Because Ajamekam Lohit Shukla Krishnam Bahvi Praja Srijamanam Sarupa Ajoheko Jushamano Nushete Jahatyenam Bhukta Bhogam Ajonya. Shvetashvatara Upanishad says there are only three things that exist and you are one of them, the souls. The souls are one of the three eternal tattva, and the other two are God and Maya. So we are the souls and we're looking for perfect happiness. We have two options where to look. You can look in God, you can look in Maya. So let's examine Maya first. The same shloka says, Lohit Shukla Krishnam, that Maya is Trigunatmak. It has three qualities. Sattva Rajatam. Sattvam Rajastam Iti Guna Prakriti Sambhava. Gita. The same thing. This Maya is made up of Sattva Rajatam. Three gunas. This means that there are three mayic areas where we can seek happiness. The tamas area is called narak. The rajas area is called mrityulok. And the sattvic area is called swarg. So narak means hell. Punyena punyalokam nayati papena papa mubhabhyameva manushyalokam. Mundaka Upanishad says, if you do pap, if you do bad actions, remember I told you the aparadharma tells you all the do's and don'ts, how to be a good person, what your responsibilities are. So if someone, instead of following those do's and don'ts for how to be a good person, they do all bad things, they don't follow, they don't observe their responsibilities, then they're punished by going to narak, which is like spiritual jail. And you stay there for a predetermined time, like a jail sentence. And once you've served your sentence and you're done suffering the consequences of your bad actions over there in narak, then you come back here, which is mrityulok. This is the rajas area, mrityulok. So obviously no one would think of going to narak in order to find happiness. So we can leave the tamas area aside. The rajas area is where we are right now. This is where you get a chance to be born as human. So this is where you get to perform new karma. And going to narak, while you're there in narak, you're not performing new karma. Just like if you're born in lower species here, in mrityulok, you're also not performing new karma. You're just undergoing the consequences of your past karma. So is there real happiness here? For that, to really understand whether there is or not, we need to understand the definition of real happiness. Is there such a definition? Of course, it's in the Vedas. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham. Chandogya Upanishad. Very clear. Three criteria. Real happiness must be of unlimited amount. Bhuma. It must last forever. And it must be ever increasing. Any happiness which meets these three qualities is real happiness. That's real divine happiness that your soul wants. That's the goal of your life, to find that kind of happiness. That is the meaning of life, to find that kind of happiness. So does that kind of happiness exist in the world? We know. We've lived here just long enough in this life to know the answer is no. There is no unlimited happiness in this world. No matter what we've been able to enjoy in this life, you could always find someone who had more than you. So it means what you had was not unlimited. It was limited to a certain amount, and someone else has more. And someone else has more than them, and someone else has more than them, whether it's a nicer car, or more money, or more prestige, more power, a higher position in society. There's always someone higher. And even if someone is the highest in this world, well, Indra is higher than you. And higher than Indra is Brahma. So there's always someone higher. It means that nowhere in this world is there actual unlimited happiness. It's always in limitations. And it's also temporary, so there's no everlasting happiness in this world. That's our own experience. You don't need me to quote anything from any scripture to prove that to you. It's your own experience that you get happiness, but number one, it's of a certain amount, it's not unlimited, and number two, it lasts for what? Moments, minutes, hours, not days. Rarely even hours. Happiness is a very passing thing in this world. It's not everlasting. And number three, it's our own experience that happiness in this world is ever decreasing, not ever increasing. While you're enjoying the thing that you love to enjoy, what moment, let's say you enjoy it for 30 minutes, so of those 30 minutes, when was the peak of your enjoyment? The first moment. After that, it keeps going down. Let's say you're looking at a beautiful painting. Some people are into art. And you travel to France, to Paris, to go to the Louvre. And you go to see the Mona Lisa, the most famous painting. You've waited your whole life to see this painting in person. You planned for years for this trip. And you go and stand in front of the Mona Lisa. The first moment will be the peak of your enjoyment. How long will you keep standing there? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour? After an hour, you're not going to want to keep, if someone makes you keep standing and looking at that painting, you'll say, oh, enough is enough, I need a change. So that's just the nature of worldly happiness. It starts here and it gradually goes. Then you need a break, you get bored of it. Then you can come back later, but even the second time, will the enjoyment be as much? It won't. If you make the trip again, take a 1 year break from the Mona Lisa, go and see the Mona Lisa again after a whole year, the excitement you felt that very first time will still be the highlight. When you go the second time, that first moment will not be as high as the other first moment from the first time. So it's just the nature of worldly happiness. It goes on decreasing. That's why we have to keep changing and looking for something new. It's just the nature of the human mind. It's the nature of worldly happiness, which according to our definition of the Vedas is not real happiness at all. It's just a dhokha. It's the illusion of happiness, which is just here one moment and gone the next, like camphor. If you leave camphor sitting out, it just evaporates into thin air. It's here and then it's gone. That's like the worldly happiness, except it happens even faster than camphor evaporating. So it means nowhere in Mrityulok, in this Rajas area, is there real happiness. Okay, what about in the Sattvic area? There's another. See, we haven't even touched the divine area yet, God's area. We're in the material area, the mayic field. We talked about Narak, the Tamas area. We talked about Mrityulok, the Rajas area. Now there's also a Sattvic area of this mayic existence. It's called Swarg, heaven, the celestial abodes. In Swarg, there's no suffering like we have on this earth planet. There's no physical suffering. Although when you go there, you have the same mind. So you still have jealousy and all of those things, but there's no physical suffering. So you don't feel hunger, you don't feel pain, you don't feel thirst, you don't get sick, you don't even have to wash your body. Over there in Swarg, your body always just exudes a nice fragrance. No sweat and dirt come out of your pores, nothing like that. So there's a lot of enjoyment, there's a lot of pleasure over there in Swarg. But it's still not unlimited. Mathematically speaking, it's hundreds and thousands, and depending in those higher levels of Swarg, it's actually millions of times greater than the pleasures of this earth planet, but it's still limited. So it doesn't meet criterion number one. And it doesn't last forever. Just like you don't go to Narak forever, nobody goes to Swarg forever. Why do you go to Swarg? Punyena punyalokam nayati. You did punya, you did good actions, so many good actions that you were rewarded with a vacation in Swarg. Petam bhuktva swargalokam vishalam chine punye martyalokam vishanti. Gita. You earned going there, and you get to enjoy according to your earnings. How many good actions, what kind of good actions, you get that many enjoyments over there in Swarg. But then it gets used up. Your balance gets used up. Just like if you deposit $100,000 in the bank, quit your job, and then just spend that money. Go to Atlantic City, go on a vacation in Hawaii. In other words, you're just spending, spending, spending. And you keep going to the bank and hitting the ATM and withdrawing whenever you need the money. Eventually, you run out. You go to the ATM and nothing comes out. Then what? Oh, enjoyment over. Back to work. So it's the same thing with going to Swarg. You earned your enjoyments over there, but while you're there, you're not doing any more good actions. Because that's also bhogyoni. You don't perform any new karma when you're over there. So eventually all your good karma from that life is used up, and you come back here and start again. So the happiness over there, although it's greater than what we get here, it's still limited, and it's not everlasting. And even while you're enjoying over there, it's not a perfect enjoyment. In the Bhagavatam it says, Dukho darkastamo nishtha chudrananda shucharpita. It's dukh mishrit. There's suffering mixed in, not physical suffering, mental suffering, for two reasons. Because you see other people there who have more than you have. Oh, that person did more good actions than me, so they have better enjoyments than I have. So the jealousy burns your heart, even over there, just as it does here. And the fear that one day this is going to end and I have to go back to work. Just like when you're on vacation, that fear is still there, like kids started school today. I remember that although summer holidays were fun, the countdown started from the first day of summer holidays, although you're thinking, oh, a full 2 months of holidays, this is great, it feels endless. But every day that goes by, the fear grows. School is coming closer. So you're enjoying summer holidays, but it's dukh mishrit, because you know it's not a permanent holiday. Eventually I have to go back to school. So it's like that in Swarg. You know the time is coming. You're going to get kicked out and you'll have to go back down in that world. Oh, there's not just enjoyment there, there's lots of suffering too. Okay, so you end up in the end having to go back. But even while you're there, while you're enjoying, that fear that it's going to end is there. So there's no perfect enjoyment over there in Swarg either, no perfect happiness. So it means that nowhere within the field of Maya, nowhere within the field of Sattva Raj Tam, not in Swarg, not in Mrityulok, not in Narak, is there any real happiness? The happiness we're looking for, which is the aim of our life. So where is that happiness? Well, now it's simple. If there are two people standing before you, and you know that one of their names, one of those men, is definitely named Dinesh, but you don't know which one. So you ask one of them, what's your name? And he says, my name is Ramesh. Then you don't even have to ask the second one. You know his name is Dinesh. It's the process of elimination. So when you only have two areas to look, we are the souls, and there are only two other things in existence, God and Maya. So we had a full examination of the Mayic area, and we found out there's no actual perfect happiness anywhere in Maya. So there's only one other place left to look, in God. So that perfect happiness must be in God. But, as I told you, just the word God is not enough. We have to be more precise. So nobody just attains God. Yesterday I told you that God has three main forms. Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagwan. So in fact you have to be that specific. Do I want to attain formless God? Do I want, meaning Nirakar, Brahma? Do I want to attain Almighty God, meaning Paramatma? Or do I want to attain God in His loving form as Bhagwan? So you have to decide. You have to be that precise. This knowledge, again, is only available in Hinduism. So how do we make that decision? How do we decide, I want this thing, or I want that thing, or I want that thing? I'm going to explain that to you tomorrow. Because we have to be precise. We have to decide this exactly. We know that, okay, anywhere in the divine field there is perfect happiness. But even within that divine field there are different choices to attain God in this way or that way or that way. So I'm going to explain all of that to you very clearly tomorrow. And you can make your own decision exactly what form of God you want to attain. And then I will also start the topic of the path to God, since that is the ultimate goal of our life, to attain perfect happiness by attaining God. Once we understand the actual exact target we're aiming for, then we have to talk about the path, how to get there. And this is a very confusing topic to many people as well, because they say there are so many paths. Why are there so many paths? Do all paths lead to the same place? Should I just follow any path with faith and think that I'll get to the right place that I have to go to? Or is there one right path and other paths are wrong? And which is the right path for me? All of these questions we'll take up starting tomorrow. So we'll finish with some kirtan, another beautiful kirtan by Shri Kripaluji Maharaj, called Lakhon Mehfil Jahan Mein Yun To, a description of a devotee's feelings for God.
सी महफिल नहीं है लाखों महफिल जहानी तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है। स्वर्ग सम्राट हो या हो चाकर, तेरे दर पे है दर्जा बराबर। स्वर्ग सम्राट हो या हो चाकर, तेरे दर पे है दर्जा बराबर। तेरे दर पे है दर्जा बराबर। तेरी हस्ती को जिसने जाना, तेरी हस्ती को हो जिसने जाना, कोई आलम में आकिल नहीं है। हस्ती को हो जिसने जाना, कोई आलम में आकिल नहीं है। लाखों महफिल जहां तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है। दर बदर खाके ठोकर जो दर बदर खाके ठोकर जो थक कर आ गया अगर कोई तेरे दर पर। दर बदर खाके ठोकर जो थक कर आ गया अगर कोई तेरे दर पर। गया अगर कोई तेरे दर पर। तूने नजरों से जो रस पिलाया वो बताने के काबिल नहीं है। तूने नजरों से जो रस पिलाया वो बताने के काबिल नहीं है। लाखों महफिल जहां में यूं तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है।
तेरी महफिल सी
कहते हो तुम हो हमारे, जोड़ मुझसे ही तू नाते सारे। जो कहते हो तुम हो हमारे, जोड़ मुझसे ही तू नाते सारे। जोड़ मुझसे ही तू नाते सारे। जान कर भी जो, जान कर भी जो नाता न जोड़े, उसके मानिंद जाहिल नहीं है। जान कर भी जो नाता न जोड़े, उसके मानिंद जाहिल नहीं है। लाखों महफिल जहां मियूं तो, तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है। जीते मरते जो तेरी लगन में, जीते मरते जो तेरी लगन में, जलते रहते विरह की अगन में। जीते मरते जो तेरी लगन में, जलते रहते विरह की अगन में। जलते रहते विरह की अगन में। है भरोसा, है भरोसा तेरा हे मुरारी, है भरोसा तेरा हे मुरारी, तू दयालु है कातिल नहीं है। है भरोसा तेरा हे मुरारी, तू दयालु है कातिल नहीं है। लाखों में फिर जहां को, तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है। तेरे रस का लगा चसका जिसको तेरे रस का लगा चसका जिसको लगता बैकुंठ फीका सा उसको तेरे रस का लगा चसका जिसको लगता बैकुंठ फीका सा उसको लगता बैकुंठ फीका सा उसको डूब कर कोई बाहर न आया डूब कर कोई बाहर न आया इसमें भवरे हैं साहिल नहीं है डूब कर कोई बाहर न आया इसमें भवरे हैं साहिल नहीं है महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है प्रेम में है सदा देना देना प्रेम में है सदा देना देना सोचना भी नहीं कुछ है लेना प्रेम में है सदा देना देना सोचना भी नहीं कुछ है लेना सोचना भी नहीं कुछ है लेना हो लेने वाला बड़ा भोला भाला लेने वाला बड़ा भोला भाला ब्रज के रसिकों में शामिल नहीं है लेने वाला बड़ा भोला भाला ब्रज के रसिकों में शामिल नहीं है लाखों महफिल जहां में यूं तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है मान ले उनको तू सिर्फ अपना मान ले उनको तू सिर्फ अपना सीख ले याद में बस पर अपना मान ले उनको तू सिर्फ अपना सीख ले याद में बस पर अपना सीख ले याद में बस तड़पना सीख ले याद में बस तड़पना लगा लेंगे सीने से तुझको लगा लेंगे सीने से तुझको दिल में बैठे हैं गाफिल नहीं है लेंगे सीने से तुझको दिल में बैठे हैं गाफिल नहीं है लाखों में फिर जहां में तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है तू पिला दे जो एक बूंद रस की तू पिला दे जो एक बूंद रस की क्या कमी है तेरे पास रस की तू पिला दे जो एक बूंद रस की क्या कमी है तेरे पास रस की क्या कमी है तेरे पास रस की फिर जो छोड़े कोई तेरा पीछा फिर जो छोड़े कोई तेरा पीछा ऐसा जाहिल भी काहिल नहीं है फिर जो छोड़े कोई तेरा पीछा ऐसा जाहिल भी काहिल नहीं है लाखों महफिल जहां में तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है कर्म है उनकी निष्काम सेवा कर्म है उनकी निष्काम सेवा धर्म है उनकी इच्छा में इच्छा कर्म है उनकी निष्काम सेवा धर्म है उनकी इच्छा में इच्छा धर्म है उनकी इच्छा में इच्छा हो सौंप दो इनके हाथों में डोरी सौंप दो इनके हाथों में डोरी ये कृपालु हैं तंग दिल नहीं है सौंप दो इनके हाथों में डोरी ये कृपालु हैं तंग दिल नहीं है लाखों महफिल जहां में हूं तो तेरी महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे 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 हो राधे गोविंद राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे राधे गोविंद गोविंद राधे लाखों महफिल जहां में हूं तो महफिल सी महफिल नहीं है। कुली वृंदावन बिहारी लाल की जय।